The Numinous Podcast with Carmen Spaniola.
Hi there, and welcome to The Numinous Podcast, where we have interesting conversations with everyday folks about the mystery of life. I'm your host, Carmen Spaniola, joining you from the lands of the Lekwungen-speaking peoples, the Songhees and the Esquimalt First Nations, recently known as Victoria, BC, Canada. And let's give it up for my man, Ruben Anderson, who is the voice of the Numinous Podcast, and my, like, crappy little sound mixing in GarageBand from 2014. Today is the 10th anniversary of the Numinous Podcast, and I'm so proud of the journey we've been on together, and I feel galvanized and enthused about carrying on in solidarity with you. This show has had like the opposite of a long tail. You know, the long tail of the internet where like things come on like really strongly and then it like tapers off until it's just this long tail. It's like kind of a model in marketing and commerce. This is the opposite. At first, it was such slow growth for so long. But, you know, like in the beginning, it would be like 100 people downloading an episode in like a month kind of thing. But now we're at almost 600,000 downloads, and I feel like it's just kind of starting to get off the ground. But a little sidebar here, friends. Do you know what a barefoot doctor is? I think I've talked about this on the show already. I've definitely talked about it on like all social media channels and like multiple times over the years. But especially if you just listened to my last episode with the People's Oracle, Dana Knuckles, where we looked ahead to the astrology of 2024 through like 2027, I want to make sure, absolutely sure, that you know about barefoot doctors, because that's our model here on the Numinous Podcast. That's our vision of collective care. And in 2024, in this era, in this generation, we are extremely well equipped for this role. And if you're listening to this show, you are better equipped for this role than perhaps you even think. So the barefoot doctors were rural folks in China, like farmers, traditional medicine people and the like, who were trained to be the frontline healthcare workers, doctors, because young people who were leaving their villages to become doctors didn't want to return to the rural life to work there. And so there was like very poor healthcare in the rural areas of China at like the turn of the last century. So there were programs with like this rural movement that already started in the 1930s. But by the 60s, Chairman Mao felt that like this was not only bad for the economy, because of course the rural folks, if they're the folks who are feeding the cities, and if they are sick and dying early, that's no good. It was also, though, just like a bad look for society. So they enrolled these farmers in a 6-month intensive. And then when they returned to their villages, they would farm 50% of the time and they'd do their doctoring 50% of the time. And they had nurses and like paramedic type help. And they were helpers who also were farming 90% of the time, and then they would help the doctors 10% of the time. And so these barefoot doctors, they did pretty much everything except like surgery and, you know, long-term treatment of major disease. They administered vaccines and modern medicines. They did family planning and maternal care. They supported hygiene and disease prevention. They did all of it, as I said, except the most serious diseases and surgery. And so that program ran in like various forms from the 1930s to the 1980s. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, access to the internet or like a podcast is equivalent to a medical education immersion program funded by the government. But I am saying that obviously, we can do more for ourselves than we think. Farmers can be doctors. Why not? And in the coming months and years, we will need to do more for ourselves and our communities than we've ever had to do before. And I know I've done lots of episodes on like collapse, and you're all really clear on where we are in time. But as I think about like my role as a communicator and as a teacher. I hope you'll listen up in this episode, because I believe right now and very soon, we are all going to need some moral fortitude to like stay upright and grounded and keep working together in the name of love and justice and equity this year and forevermore. So on that note, happy 10th anniversary of the Numinous Podcast to me. Hooray, huzzah. As I said, when I started the show in 2014, like really the biggest barriers to entry were two things, technology and like the market. So the tech was very new and it was like a total pain in the ass to get your feed set up and like learn how to use GarageBand, and there weren't that many places to find like royalty free music and all that stuff. Plus there weren't that many like podcast players and curation sites. The algorithm wasn't as refined in terms of like delivering your show to your audience. So it was like a pretty low ROI, return on investment, on the time spent creating it. And like, especially because, like I said, the second thing is that not many people that I knew at the time actually listened to podcasts. So like for the number of hours it took to create and publish a show and then like have very low download numbers, like, you know, 100 in the first month for an episode, like that was a labor of love. But there were conversations that I wanted to capture. And over the years, having the show has opened up doors to conversations I probably couldn't have had without it. And, you know, in 2014, I was still pretty fresh off my bankruptcy. I was still fairly new in the town I live in. I was trying to make a fresh start and recover my confidence as an entrepreneur. And so I just kind of was getting back to my roots. I was returning to the perennial wisdom and the ethics around personal leadership that I'd been shaped by like way back in high school. Because, you know, coming out of a long dark night of the soul takes years, and it's really hard to reach past your trauma towards the things you really care about. It's a lot of work to reach towards your values and step into how you want to show up for your people. But I have this list that I keep on my desk. Sometimes it's in the top drawer, but for the last couple of years, it's been on my like little paper organizer on my desk. It's this list that was handed out to me in my graduate year of high school, the beginning of the 12th grade, by my Western civilization teacher, Graham Anderson. May he rest in peace. It's 32 years old, this little piece of paper that I still have. And when I received this paper from that dear old man, Mr. Anderson, who was a true elder in like every sense you'd conceive of the word, except maybe like warmth. He wasn't exactly a smiley guy. You know, he was a Renaissance man of like towering intellect and broad talent. And he was well past the age of retirement, still teaching Western Civ, trying to like shape young minds to care about culture and thought and art and architecture and like empire, basically. He had a British accent. When I received this paper from him, though, I felt more parented in that moment than I ever had in my life. Like, I felt like this was an adult that was preparing me for the daunting task of becoming an adult. And I remember, I think he gave a lecture, I feel like it was like an hour or so, about the themes on the list, but I don't remember any of the words specifically. I've just held on to this list for over three decades. This list is titled Qualities of Leadership, the Qualities of Leadership according to Mr. Anderson. Number one, integrity and example. Number two, loyalty. Number three, courage. Number four, self-confidence. Number five, self-control. Number six, justice and fairness. Number seven, decisiveness. Number eight, tact. Number nine, enthusiasm. Number 10, values. Timeless, right? Timeless. I return to this list a lot. It has guided me in this daunting task. It has guided my life and shaped my character. It's been a sure compass for all my projects, but especially the Numinous Podcast. And it's right here on my desk, always. And, you know, some days this show feels just like a vanity project. Like, I don't really have like a singular or higher purpose. And so that means I don't really make like goals. I don't have dreams attached to it. I just want to connect with someone. And, you know, I feel like they're more likely to do it because I have a platform to share with them. But maybe that's like a little bit of a cynical view of myself, because actually underneath that, this show is about my values. And values can be really difficult to articulate. And I think that's okay. I think if what you care about is something you can feel, but you have a hard time explaining, then you're actually really onto something. Like, if it's so big and important that it doesn't fit into clean categories, and it's kind of like, you know, it's like an octopus. It just like seems to mean so many things to you, then you're moving in the right direction. And I think it's less important to be able to verbalize our values than it is to be able to stand for them and reach for them and try to embody them. So for this 10th anniversary show, what I'm going to do to honor this decade of my body of work is I'm going to share three secrets with you. Three secrets about me and about how my evolution as a person, I would even say like the evolution of my identity, is quite bound up in this show, the Numinous Podcast. Okay, so the first secret is embarrassing because I don't really know what it says about me. It's like highly subjective. It's probably very dependent on how much you like me. But I guess also just to be honest with you that this show kind of is a vanity project. This is so embarrassing. I'm so vain. Okay, here's secret number one. It's about the best part of doing this show. Okay, I'm like totally contracting. I feel very embarrassed to tell you this, but I feel like you've listened for so long. Some of you, it's like time for a little honest self-disclosure. I'm not gonna like celebrate all my work without, you know, being honest and fair about it. Okay, I'm just filling time because I feel so vain. Secret number one, the best part of doing this show is how often my guests tell me that I've asked them the best questions they've ever received for an interview. So like I usually send people a set of question prompts like the day before the interview so they can get a sense of like the narrative arc I'm trying to construct and they can gather their thoughts without being like overly practiced. And when I get an email back or like I arrive on the call and they say something like, I have to be honest with you, these are the best questions I've ever been asked. It's so refreshing. Okay, that's like candy for my inner child. And especially, okay, this part might be more for my inner adolescent, especially if they're like quite famous and their publicist has pitched to be on my show. And like, I can tell like pretty clearly they don't know who I am. They haven't listened. And they're like very successful public figures. So like, I love it when they sort of can't conceal their surprise. They're like surprised that some unknown person has sent them the best questions they've ever been asked. I like live for that. It's like a challenge for me to understand their work so well that I not only ask like a pretty good smart question, but one that makes them feel something like curiosity or expansion, or like they feel very seen and understood and met. Like, I fucking love that. I feel like I do like to challenge them a little bit too. Like, I always try to find a spot where I can lean in with like just a little more pressure, just to see if I can find like an authentic and unrehearsed response, you know? With some people that's harder than others, but I really enjoy how my interview skills have become honed over the last 10 years. And I know, like, I don't listen to my own episodes. It's too cringy. I know, I already know I should talk less. I should shut the fuck up sometimes. You know, I think if you ever listen to the first cuts of some other famous podcasts, again, I don't really listen to too many, but when I do, I like to listen to the like unedited full length ones, because then you can hear those interviewers like stumble with their words and kind of be like verbally processing like I do sometimes. But like their editors just work their magic to make them sound totally collected and concise. So I don't have that. It's still just me and my garage van. So I don't always do a great job of just like zipping it and getting out of the way for the guest. But I do get told on the regular by guests that I have asked them the best questions they've ever gotten. done. That makes me feel amazing. And, you know, it's kind of my way of honoring my guest. Like, I want to signal to them right away that, like, oh, I'm picking up what they're putting down. I'm tracking them. I'm really with them in this conversation. And I'm also always thinking of the listeners, too. Like, you know, there's the questions I write, and then there's the spontaneous follow-ups, right? So, like, on the rare occasion I do listen to someone's podcast, and they have a guest who says something, and, like, a follow-up or a clarifying question pops into my head, I get so frustrated when the interviewer doesn't ask. It's like I'll feel like there's this obvious follow-up question. I want them to just like interject or at least bring them back, circle back to it. And that obvious follow-up question is just like hanging there in the ether. It's very bad for my compulsive need for symmetry. So that's secret number one of why I do this show. I am addicted to the praise of the praiseworthy. Okay, secret number two. Episode 46, the episode with my child called Mirabella Ponders the Mystery, is my greatest treasure on earth. It is like, if I could think of it as a possession, as a thing that I have, that file is my greatest treasure. It's 16 minutes of my personal heaven. They were 11 years old at the time. They were uncensored and mostly unselfconscious and, you know, just themselves, like thoughtful, but also willing to just not know and ask questions. Now at 20 years old, they're still like very thoughtful and soft-spoken like that. But, you know, now at 20, there is a self-consciousness. They don't like their picture taken. I hardly have any pictures with them. And the ones that I do are, you know, they're very sheepish. They're very selective with their touch and eye contact. Again, not because they're like unloving, you know, they're still my like beautiful, loving child, but it's just because their nervous system is like easily overpowered by mine and by the world, not just me. And they just have a very sensitive nervous system and sensory processing is really challenging. So the contact nutrition that I used to enjoy with them, the reciprocity, the closeness, it's very different now. And in the podcast, I get to hear their voice. They're like a brave little voice. Oh my God, it kills me. It's just this like gentle conversation. We were on the big bed. I was folding laundry. We were talking about dreams and angels and what happens after you die. And like, oh my God, it's my favorite 15 minutes in the more than 10,000 minutes we've had of this show. I can't begin to tell you how much I treasure the recording of that memory. Like that kind of conversation was fairly typical. Like it happened pretty often between us, but to have it recorded is just, it's so priceless to me. You know, at the time, well, when my kiddo was young, like I was a single mom for the first 5 years of their life. And then I was really struggling, you know, emotionally and financially for the next 3 to 4 years. And so a lot of that time is a blur for me. So to have proof that it happened, that I was there, I was present and curious with them, we shared intimacies, my child trusted me, I'm just so grateful to them and to my past self for that gift. Here's a little clip from that episode.
So what do you think happens after you die?
Well, I bet you can probably choose where you want to go next. Hmm. You have a wide selection of who you want to be.
Hmm. Who would you want to be? Or what would you want to be?
Something that has a happy life and lives a long time.
Okay, so like not, you wouldn't want to come back as like a grasshopper or...
No.
Or some other life form or like a bird. I don't think birds live all that long.
When you say birds, it depends. Like, eagle, yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. And probably a barn owl.
Okay.
Just an owl of any type.
You see, you like the heavy hitters when it comes to symbolic birds, hey? Like, yeah. Owls are, do you know what owls symbolize?
Wisdom.
Yeah. Do you know what eagles symbolize?
No, actually.
Transformation and spiritual... I guess I would say medicine. So what if there's a person who doesn't believe that you can come back as something, like some, you know, Reuben, your stepdad, my husband, he thinks that you just stay compost, like you, you know, you become part of the earth again. What if, what do you think is going to happen to Reuben after he dies?
That I'm also not sure of. I guess what you believe in is probably going to happen once you die. Because who knows?
Right.
So that still checks out. That stands up for me. That episode still hits. Like, so good. Okay, secret number three. Secret number three, as I mentioned, I don't really listen to other people's podcasts. I don't really listen to my own podcast. I'm actually not much of a podcast listener. And I'm also not really much of a, like, comfort TV show watcher. Like, I'm kind of a one-and-done person. But I do have a comfort listen when I'm feeling blue, when I'm feeling low down. And my comfort listen is an episode of my own show. It's episode 24. Grieving for Susan and Civilization with my dear, now deceased friend, Michael Phillips. It's for the same reasons that I mentioned. I like the previous episode I shared with my kiddo. At the time, Michael was in the early stage of his dementia, so I knew I needed to record conversations with him. You can hear him kind of reaching for words and concepts at times. And even though it's hard for me to listen, it just brings up so much tenderness, and I feel so reassured knowing he's an ancestor for me. And I have a little story to share about him after we listen to a couple of clips here. How are you feeling?
How am I feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm okay. You don't want a discursive, that's not a question you want a discursive response to. Just, putting me at my ease. Is that right? Something like that.
No, I guess what I'm picking up on is there's like a tenderness or a something today.
Yes, so that's been going on for some time.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably don't want to divert to that. I'm deeply grieving a friend who is dying, and I haven't been there before. You know, I've had friends die before, and of course, all my parents and their generation is all dead, that was different. That was different. Dying of those people was different from a dear friend who is not ready to go, has been clobbered by cancer and is dying, and I keep grieving it.
Mm-hmm.
I keep grieving it, and that has awakened other grievings, particularly the grieving for my species. I'm really, really sorry about our species. I think it's a failure. I don't think it's going to survive much longer.
Mm.
A few hundred years, but they're destroying their own habitat. We are destroying our own habitat. And I think it's that we are doing our habitat is part of what I grieve over. And because of Susan's dying and some of the things that she's leaving undone, I think I've been coupling that to the overall grief that I know.
Do you think that as a species, it's too early for us to go in the same way that it is for Susan?
Well, sure. I mean, we'll be one of the shortest term so-called dominant species of pilot that the planet has ever seen. We've already killed off more relations than any other ever did. And the disaster that we're creating is worse than any other disaster that's ever happened. The interplanetary rock that did in the dinosaurs was really nothing, not up to what we're up to. Well, maybe there was another previous disaster that took away, I think, 95% of living creatures, living life forms. And I don't think we're going to do that. I don't think we'll last that long. I think we'll do ourselves in before the ants and the cockroaches disappear.
So is that the source of grief, that we're doing it to ourselves? Because I mean, my understanding of life is that it dies. And so the same, I would guess, would apply to a culture or a civilization, is that everything, you know, it's the creation destruction cycle. So do you think that what's sad about it is that we're doing it to ourselves?
I think that we're doing it to everybody else too. That's
like all the other species.
All our relations. Mm-hmm. But mostly because I just love human consciousness. It's just the nicest thing that's ever happened to me, right? And the fact that it isn't survival, you know, stuff. It's not the stuff of survival, obviously. We're just, when the way our population grows and the way we kill each other and all that stuff is, seems to me to be like the little rodents that run off the cliff, you know, periodically.
Little lemmings, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
I wonder about, though, whether mankind, being an animal, has just reached its upper limit towards consciousness. And so the striving towards consciousness ultimately would, you know, do you believe that it's possible that it leads towards transcendence of these issues? Or do you think maybe that consciousness just can't fit in the human animal after a certain level, because the responsibilities of that lead us to destruction?
No, I don't know. I don't know any. I don't know the answers to any of those things, except that you asked us what I think. I think probably that that the wonders and beauties of human consciousness, the ones that so please me, are peculiar to our species, and every species has things that are peculiar to it that are just fine, right? It's not, you know, we do tend to brag about it an awful lot. We think we're the top of the heap, and that we're really special. And I don't believe that. I don't believe that we're really special. But I do believe that the things that we've learned about consciousness and our brains and so on is pretty nice. It's pretty good. It probably is the case that no living being on this planet, since the life that as we know it had begun, has achieved some of the things that we've done, but a great many of our achievements are horrible. You know, our mechanical civilization, all this great industrial stuff is just horrible, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't help noticing that all the time. And also I can't help liking it all the time. I really like, you know, streets and libraries and music and all the other stuff that we've got. So I think that's more of the grief that gets me, is that we've got these two different kinds of things happening in us all the time, and those are the things that we think we're winning with. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're not. We're losing with them, and we're doing everybody else in too. So we create a substance between ourselves, among ourselves. We create a substance. We call it our marriage. We call it our friendship. We call it our meeting. This substance is not us, and it's not visible, but it is tangible. Mm. It's tangible to a loving heart. And that's, you know, those are not always that plentiful. They're not around all the place. There's a lot of places where, a lot of times when we don't have that connection, you know, at home we do usually with our family. I mean, we can be mad at each other and, you know, all that stuff. But that substance is there, and it comes to mind, and it comes into view lots of times, you know, very, very frequently, you know, every few minutes sometimes, right? And that's what she's not going to get the rest of. But she's got it now, you know. So, where were we? Where have you gotten me to?
That episode was recorded in the summer of 2014. By fall of 2017, Michael had experienced significant cognitive decline, and he often didn't recognize or acknowledge me when I saw him at the Quaker Meeting House. And so it was really very painful for me to be there, so I attended less and less. But on a Wednesday in January of 2018, I went to a silent midday meeting. And I was sitting in the circle in silence. There was like about 20 people there. We're in the circle. We're actually waiting for our time to begin. We're doing that thing where everything just kind of settles. And Michael walked in like a minute or two late. And he walked quite boldly, like right through the center of the group. His wife sat on one side of the circle. And I had had my eyes closed, but I sort of just opened them to like sort of peek and see who was walking through the center of the circle, because it's like a bit unusual to do that. And he was walking like with real purpose towards the chair over to my left. And he looked at me, just kind of glanced my way, and he kept walking. But then before he got to his chair, he stopped really abruptly and he like swept around and he looked me right in the face and he just beamed this recognition. And so like I smiled and I was like beaming back, and we both kind of like were leaning in, like almost like we were going to touch our heads or something. And it was really sort of cute. And then he like turned and kept walking and sat down. And there's a half hour of silence, but then afterwards it's time to share afterthoughts. And Michael spoke first and he said, "When I was a young man, there was a very old man whose name I used to know. And when he'd come upon you, he'd greet you saying, 'I remember you very well.' And he often didn't, actually, because his memory was so poor. But he knew that he had known." And then Michael, he just turned in my direction. And he turned and he looked and he beamed at me again and he said, "I remember you very well." Michael died in December of 2019. And I'm so glad I can still hear his voice. And it was so good to be remembered very well in that moment. Okay, so there are three secrets about me and about the podcast, and hopefully they offered you some food for thought about the mysteries of life. I want to say I received many messages from listeners with really great ideas about how I might celebrate this 10th anniversary milestone. And I just really couldn't decide. I also got a lot of appreciation for how certain specific episodes have impacted people's lives. And that has felt like really deep acknowledgement of how much labor has gone into becoming the person who creates such a thing, this body of work, this lens upon the world. I don't really look back on the past 10 years of the show because, like I said, it can be, I don't know. Like so many people, I can be a pretty harsh critic of my own work. And it's just too cringy to look back on. Even listening to the clips, it's like, oh God, no wonder my friend Chris was like, "Please let me buy you a microphone because the white noise was so bad." I didn't know. There wasn't very good technology for the layperson back then. I guess, so here's bonus secret number four. I want this show to stand as a guide for my child in case anything ever happens to me. I am looking forward to the future. I think of the Numinous podcast as like a little self-help manual, a little mutual self-help to help us all become the people we need to be for the future we're going to get. And you know, I want my child to be able to listen to the whole thing over 10 years, maybe over 20 years, to see this is who I was, this is what I believed then, but then this is what I came to believe, this is what I stood for, this is how I developed and grew over time, this is how I tried to enlist others in a vision of the world that originally emerged from this like simple list of 10 qualities of leadership. Okay, actually, there's one more thing I want to say about the 10 qualities. Here's special bonus secret number 5, I guess. Okay, there is one quality on there that will trip you up. It's like a trick, and I had to learn this. And that is number 2, loyalty. Because loyalty to what? You know, that school that I went to, I didn't send my own child there. No way. You know, I've had to break my loyalty to some people and things and institutions and ways of being in order to stay loyal to my values, you know. And in my 20s and my 30s, I'd have told you different things I was loyal to than I would now. But in my 40s, I'm 48 now, it's very clear to me. I know where my loyalties lie. I'm loyal to the land. And that's land with like a capital L. It means something very specific. And I've long felt that, but I recently read, I read an excellent book by Max Liboron called Pollution is Colonialism. I'll link to it in the show notes. And they are a Michif researcher, an indigenous person in Canada, what's so-called Canada. And they explained this idea of land in a way that just like made my heart sing. They talk about indigenous concepts of capital L land as, quote, relations between the material aspects some people might think of as landscapes, like water, soil, air, plants, stars, and histories, spirits, events, kinships, accountabilities, and other people that aren't human. So perfectly said. So as I think ahead to the next 10 years of the Numinous podcast, I'm focusing on ensuring that if anything ever happens to me, my child, my beloveds, my listeners, they will all know very clearly where my loyalties lay. I would like to be remembered as an animist and a teacher of trauma stewardship. I want to be known as a barefoot doctor on the front lines of trauma, supporting mental health during times of collapse. And I want my work now and in the future to become ever more aligned with the working class from which I come. I believe in and I value a harm reduction approach to community health and well-being with the barefoot doctor model as inspiration. I want you to have the same information, tools, and skills that I have so you can be self-determined in your care and your well-being. And I want this show to be one little point in your constellation of frameworks that you use to be a leader in your family and in your community, and that in a way that helps you walk in integrity as an example of living in alignment with your values. So for listeners who've been with me since the beginning, your willingness to evolve spiritual practice with me to incorporate the wounds of capitalist, imperialist, white supremacist patriarchy, and to work to break the spells that we're collectively under is so heartening to me. I love belonging to this little corner of the internet with you. It's sort of like a, if you know, you know. Numinous podcast, if you know, you know. You know what we're about. And for folks who are newer, who are drawn because, you know, this work was already underway for you and you're starting to become stronger, your willingness to embrace grief and rage and collapse awareness and class consciousness as part of your spiritual practice is so important and so needed, and welcome. Welcome to this little corner. Welcome to this place. So to all my listeners, your deep engagement with the hard things in life is how you honor me. And thank you for all the gratitude you've sent my way. It's also how you honor yourselves and what you care about. And I love you for walking in the world, reaching towards what you care about. Thanks for being here, and thanks for being you. In the show notes today, you'll find links to the episodes I sampled, the book I mentioned, the Wikipedia entry for Barefoot Doctors, which, honestly, sidebar, I really feel deserves a movie. Like fiction or nonfiction, I would take that. Who do we lobby for a movie about Barefoot Doctors? Please pass this along. And I'm also going to link to the People's Public Health Education Campaign. Yes, we are on board. Wearing is caring, my friends. Wear your mask out in the world and keep a fresh, individually wrapped one in your pocket or purse. When you're indoors with the service provider, here's a script. You could say, hey, would you mind wearing a mask for our appointment? And if they seem willing, but they're fumbling for one, hand them your N95. Say, here you go. Thanks so much. Yes. That's what we want. Wearing is caring, friends. Quality of leadership number 9, enthusiasm. Yay, masks. Huzzah. Let's do this. Again, thank you for being here. Stay tuned to my newsletter to know what's going on in my world. If you want to stay in touch, if you want to come join us in the Numinous Network, where this show, it comes alive, my friends. You can sign up for my newsletter at carmenspagnola.com. CARMEN SPAGNOLA. Until next time, take care.